Why do I conduct my show on this matter, Mundo?
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
All six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Oh, yeah, the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your host, Joe Vecchio. This is show 17, and I hope you like the new intro. You know, when I was doing the Joey Jojo show, I used to put together one of those every week, and that got old real fast. And I'm glad to be back on the air, and I'm so happy that I put together that new intro just for you guys. Aren't you glad? A present from me just for you on the Internet's free radio talk show. I am completely and totally free. It doesn't cost you anything above and beyond what you've already paid for the computer and the web service and all that crap. I am completely and totally free. And I do this on a real shoestring budget. I mean, really. I mean, it's a very simple program. I have a little mixer and a microphone. I would think that I put everything that I needed together, apart from, you know, the computer stuff, which I have anyway, less than $100. Less than $100. It's really not that difficult, you know. And you got to have a little technical know-how, but not that much. I mean, you know, just you know, the type of technical know-how to throw together a stereo system, to hook up the speakers and to hook up the little things to it. You know, we talk a bit on my blog. I talk a bit on my blog about my work, about what I do for a living, and I work for Siemens, which is a very large multinational company. And as you know, if you've been listening to the show regularly, they announced that there were going to be some layoffs. It wasn't any surprise because we knew that they were moving parts of the plant down to Mexico. And, you know, I'm neither here nor there on that. I'm not going to argue whether that's good or bad business because, you know, Siemens is not a typical American-type company. They are a manufacturing plant, and they're actually, their headquarters is in Germany, and they have American operations, but they're a huge multinational corporation that goes back a long time. And I'm a little less inclined to dig into them as I would, you know, like Enron or something like that, because Enron was built for the sake of bilking people out of their money. Siemens has its little fingers in a lot of different things, from high-tech to some very low-tech stuff. And what I do with the plant where I work is pretty low-tech stuff. And we had some meetings about the layoffs and about what they're planning. And I want to give Siemens credit because a lot of companies simply wouldn't talk to people like that. I mean, people bitch about the company all the time, and that's standard for any workplace. But they know that things are coming, and they're making sure that everybody at the plant is aware of what's happening. They could just go out and say nothing and just say, keep working, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, you'll find out when you'll find out. But they're taking pains to make sure that people understand that, you know, for a lot of people, and they're going to be losing about 120 people between now and July. I guess July is the last cuts. Some of the first cuts will come in mid-May. And I don't know if I'm going to keep my job or not. My job has been classified as a bumpable position, which means if somebody with seniority would rather work where I'm working than lose their job, then, you know, I have to bow out. And that's understandable, and that's seniority system, and that's fair. But Siemens is doing a very good job of informing us and keeping us aware, even though we might not like the fact that they're moving stuff to Mexico. Since they're planning on doing that anyway, at least they're trying to be honest. Of course, it's a union shop, and I don't know if any company would be inclined to do that if it wasn't a union shop. I filled out an application for the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and I should say as a disclaimer, even though I'm not yet officially a member, but let's just say it anyway, that my views do not represent the views of the IBEW or of any of its locals or of any AFL-CIO affiliated union in the United States or anything else. My views are my views. This is Joe Vecchio talking, and I am the only one that I represent. I'm the only one I speak for. Now, as I mentioned before in the show, what I do for a living, I pull parts off of a paint line. Basically, it's a big overhead conveyor belt, and people put parts on one end. They hang the little metal parts, and they go through a room where they get painted. It's all the same battleship gray color. It's circuit box stuff, really, big and small circuit boxes for construction sites mainly. And my job is to pull them off the line and stack them neatly so that they can be brought, either put into storage or brought to where the assemblers put the guts into them. At any rate, we had three, and the one person there wasn't present on Friday. But after we had the meeting on Friday, my coworker and I, Dave, we went over to them in the break room because we all had our break at the same time right after the meeting, because it was that close to our break time anyway. And we were just talking to them, saying, look, when it comes down to determining who gets to stay and who gets to go, the amount of parts that you hang on a line is not going to be something that they're going to consider along those times. I mean, these guys, you know, and granted, they're foreigners and they come from a different background, but we're trying to explain to them because they're being intimidated by our supervisor to, you know, put more and more stuff on the line, and probably in the long run to their physical detriment, because putting some of these parts on the line can be very, very physical and very, very damaging to them. At any rate, we were explaining to them that it doesn't really matter. I mean, we weren't advising them to be lazy, but we're saying it doesn't matter to them, to the management, if they hang 8,000 parts or 10,000 parts. When the times come for the layoff, then they're just, you know, they're going to be determined by whether or not someone with a more senior position would rather work where they're working or, you know, go somewhere else. And that's the bottom line of it. And that they're not really going to impress their bosses. And I know everybody out there who's working, and especially if you work in a manufacturing type plant, I think you understand this, you know, that you can work harder, you can do the extra thing, but you know what, you know, a lot of times it doesn't really pay and it doesn't really matter. I mean, my libertarian friends will sit there and tell you, oh, it's all a meritocracy and, you know, everybody gets what they deserve through their hard work. And that's, you know, pure bullshit, to be perfectly honest. And sometimes that works, but usually the bosses don't care, and they're more likely to take advantage of you if you do that. But we tried to explain this to them, and they didn't necessarily listen, but at least they heard us. You know, and it's really, really kind of a shame, because, you know, I'm the type of person who likes to do that little bit extra. And I like to, you know, like if I come in a little early and if I see there's some work to be done, I'll do it. Just simply because I'm there already anyway, so it doesn't really make that big a deal to me. But constantly I'm being put into a position where if I do something like that, then that's what they expect out of me, and I'll be expected to do that more often. And again, anybody, any of you out there who work for a living know exactly what I'm talking about. I know a lot of people who have had the same type of experience. So, and I hate to be this way, but I just take the point of view where I work when I'm supposed to work, and I work as hard as I can without overly tiring myself, and I don't overly exert myself. I just do my job, and I do the best job I can, and that's it. And I try not to do anything extra simply because I know that it's not really appreciated. Because I know that the odds are that I'll lose my job, and I'm going to start looking for work. By the way, if anybody knows of a job in the Atlanta area that they think I might be interested in, you can email me. In fact, I would encourage people to email me or comment on the blog, and the blog is http://. No www. I think you can put it there. It's cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's C-U-P-O-J-O-E, cupojoe.blogspot, blogspot.com. That's the blog, and you're probably, if you're listening to this, the odds are you're listening to it from the White Rose Society, and you can link onto the blog from there, or you can go to the site, cupjoe.com, and get to the blog from there. You know, I have cupjoe.com, and I paid for that site, and that's fine. Mostly I use that for storage. I'm not looking for a lot of hits at that site, because that's just basically, you know, here's where I put the show. You can download the show from there. You can stream it from there. But you can also stream it from the blog, and you can get the archives from the White Rose Society. And I want to talk about that for a second because, you know, last week I brought up the fact that I really don't think that many people listen to the show. And to be honest, until yesterday, I had no idea how many people were downloading the show from the White Rose Society or listening online, because I can only go by the amount of hits that I get on my blog and on the main site. And I really only average around 7 hits a day on the main site. But like I said, it's not something I'm really interested in. I'm more interested in people getting on, you know, the blog and stuff like that. And I get about 50 hits a day. I average about 53 hits a day. And it goes up and down depending on how much I feel like posting. I mean, that's the problem when you're being a blogger. It really is kind of a full-time thing because you got to go out there and post something all the time. I mean, the big bloggers, Atrios and Daily Kos. And I thought it was pronounced Daily Chaos, but it's Daily Kos. You know, they do several updates during the course of the day, so a lot of people keep tuning in. And they get thousands of hits, and a lot of very important people read them. And I get about 50 hits or so. And I have a few regulars, you know, Carolyn C. is one of my regulars, Ziggy, who comments regularly. He's a regular reader and a regular commenter. Bruce Lewis, a.k.a. B-Chan, who I've known personally for a long time, even though I completely disagree with his whacked-out viewpoint. Of course, he would say the same about me. He's a regular. I invite people to listen to the show. I invited my sister to listen to the show, and my sister is a professional journalist, although she doesn't work in the news division. She works as a entertainment reporter, which is cool. You know, that's the kind of job I would like to have, actually, being an entertainer. She's an editor, and she's always bitching. You know, I had a letter printed in the New York Times last week, and she wrote me an email. She was amazed that people can still write in a clear, concise manner. So I'm glad I impressed her in that sense. But she doesn't always have the time to listen in on the show. And I mentioned a couple weeks ago that she's getting married. So that's also a great thing. But at any rate, getting back to my original story, and I'm going in a roundabout circle. I was talking about the White Rose Society, and Ben Birch is the guy that runs that. And he's a real treasure. It's whiterosesociety.org. And if you can, please donate some money to their organization and what they do, because I'm not the only show that they archive. They do the great Randy Rhoads show, and they do Peter Werby's show, and the Guy James show, and several others. And, you know, I'm very happy to be on their site. And Ben was kind enough to send me how many downloads my show was getting. And show number 15 had something like 394 or 354 downloads, which shocked me. It absolutely shocked me. So to all of you out there who are listening, thank you. Thank you so much. And please comment on the blog, cupofjoe.blogspot.com. Please comment on it because, you know, I like that feedback and I like to know that people are interested. And if you like the show, spread the word. And if you know some people who are looking for a radio show host, let them know. I've been talking a little bit with some of the people from rantradio.com, and I'm going to try to increase that. Maybe I can figure out a way to get a regular slot on their station. I can't do a live show. I don't have the technology for it. I would love to do a call-in show, but I am going to make some improvements to the show. One of the things I want to do is to get a tape recorder or something and get a smaller mixer or something and do interviews on spot. I'm also negotiating for people to come in here and do interviews. I'm going to be going down to Orlando, Florida in mid-May, and there's some people down there that I want to try to talk to and record a show to put on here. So I'm looking forward to that. I really am, because I like the idea of doing that, and I want to do more things for the show. You know, I really only have so much time, and I do the best I can with the tools I am given. So anyway, let's have a little music, and we'll come back, and we'll talk some more about other things. This is Joe Vecchio, and this is the Cup of Joe Radio Show.
So just how far down do you want to go? Well, we could talk it out over a cup of Joe, and you could look deep into my eyes like I was a supermodel. Uh-huh. You and me, baby, no one else we could trust. We'll say nothing to no one, no how. Or we bust and never crack a smile or flinch or cry.
the pathos. We'll be right back.
Genesis, Land of Confusion, a blast from the past from the 1980s. Phil Collins, the lead singer. And we had before that the Refreshments with Bandidos. Usually I play three songs, but these were kind of long songs, so I figured I'd just keep it with two. Welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am, once again, your humble host, Joe Vecchio. And, you know, I read a lot of different websites to get some of my information. I read some of the more, quote-unquote, legitimate sites. But I also read some, you know, the standard blogs and stuff like that. And there's a new one that got started out by a group of people, some of whom were allied with Daily Coasts and some other blogs. And it's called thegadflyer.com. And they're basically just one more left-wing, self-publishing type of website. And there was an article in there called Getting Tough with the Right. And it's by the editor-in-chief of the Gadflyer, Paul Waldman. And let me read an excerpt from this. It's called Finding the Warrior Spirit. And he wrote, "What progressives should learn from Grover Norquist." Actually, let's start before that. So the conservative network has its roots in the wreckage of the 1964 Goldwater campaign, but its clearest manifestation is found today in the meeting held every Wednesday in the offices of Grover Norquist's Americans for Tax Reform. Among the 100 or so people who attend this meeting are Capitol staffers, reporters from the conservative press, Republican lobbyists, conservative activists, and Republican consultants. The meetings are an opportunity to share information, plot strategy, and coordinate the conservative message. Now, George W. Bush started sending representatives to the Wednesday meetings before he even announced his candidacy for the presidency, and White House aides continued to attend. As Norquist said in early 2001, there isn't an us and them with this administration. They is us, we is them. What progressives should learn from Norquist isn't just the power of organization and coordination, as important as they are. Rather, it's the warrior spirit that animates Norquist and his allies. As Newt Gingrich told the Conservative Heritage Foundation back in 1988, "This war between liberals and conservatives has to be fought with the scale and duration and savagery that is only true of civil wars." After Bush took office in 2001, Norquist told the crowd at a Republican fundraiser, "The Democrats are the lefties, the takers, the coercive utopians. They are not stupid. They are evil. Evil." Now, no one's suggesting that progressives go to these extremes, either in their hearts or in their rhetoric, but they need to understand what they're up against. In the 1984 film that made the career of California's current governor, a soldier sent back from the future explains to the heroine the nature of her cyborg enemy and offers a perfect description of today's conservative movement. "It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with. It doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear. And it absolutely will not stop ever until you are dead." When this is what you're facing, you have two choices. The first choice is to run and hide, rightly or wrongly. This is the choice progressives believe their leaders have taken in the past few years. The second choice, the only choice, is to stand and fight. Now, there are many on the left who are more than a little discomforted by the combativeness that rank-and-file progressives are now demanding. For too long, too many have been gripped by the fantasy of a politics that has never and will never exist, a politics of consensus and cooperation where, after a good talk and a good hug, all disagreement is swept away and our shared values guide us toward a single set of goals. While progressives sit around musing about how great it would be if we could all just get along, conservatives have been beating the crap out of them. The sooner they get rid of this fantasy, and the sooner they can start getting something accomplished. This is a very good few paragraphs here. It goes on. There's more to that. It's gadflyer.com, GADFLYER. And again, the name of the thing is Getting Tough with the Right. Now, I agree with that, and this is not the only sentiment I've heard here. There's another organization called the Center for American Progress, and I get their daily email reports, and they're very good. But realistically, you know, I think they're just another left-wing thing that does basically what he's talking about, talking and not really doing anything. And I sent a letter to the CAP, and this was way back on my blog from Friday, October 31st, 2003. You can get there if you click on the links for the leftovers, as I call them, the archives of the blog, and that would be the October archives. At any rate, on the blog, which is by the way, cupojoe.blogspot.com. For those of you who don't already know that, cupojoe.blogspot.com. Dot com. And it was basically, I wrote a letter to the Conservative Center for American Progress, and not surprisingly, I didn't get a reply. And this is what I wrote to them. I sort of, sirs, first of all, please forgive the length of this letter. I realize that you don't always have the time to read every email, but I am urging you to read this in its entire. Before I begin in earnest, however, please allow me to introduce myself, and I talk a little bit about blah, blah, blah. I'm not as well-read or well-known as someone like Atrios, but if you look around, you'll see my writings here and there. I also do twice-weekly internet-based radio show where I talk about assorted issues. I am writing to you because I think that we all have a lot of work ahead of us, and I wanted to share with you a quote from UC Berkeley professor George Lakoff, who is a linguist who has been studying the use of language by the right and how it helps them. To quote the article, conservative foundations give large block grants year after year to their think tanks. They say, here are several million dollars, do what you need to do. And basically, they build infrastructure, they build TV studios, hire intellectuals, set aside money to buy a lot of books to get them on the bestseller lists, hire research assistants for their intellectuals so they'll do well on TV, and hire agents to put them on TV. They do all of that. Meanwhile, liberals say, we're giving you $25,000, but don't waste a penny of it. Make sure it all goes to the cause. Don't use it for administration, communication, infrastructure, or career development. This needs to change. Look at the blogosphere. Look at all the talent we have. Well-written commentaries by those who are considered to be rank amateurs. All of it that's going to waste because people, myself included, are denied a greater organ with which to get the message out or are shackled by poverty from doing even more and better work. Now, I can't speak for all of them, but I can speak for myself. Help us. Find ways to put us to work as researchers, journalists, columnists. Gather us up. Train us. Give us a sense of focus. And most of all, get us on a payroll. There is no reason we should be expected to starve to death while the right wing makes sure their people are well paid enough to be able to focus like a laser beam on the issues they think are important. This is not a case of becoming like the enemy. We don't have to stoop to their level, but we have to match their energy with our own, and we have to make sure that we are all working together. The national media are against us, but in the growing world of the internet, they are becoming increasingly irrelevant. People with no formal education and training are scooping traditional journalists. Look at what happened when Russ Click, the editor of Memory Hole, managed using simple techniques to unedit a Department of Justice report on employee diversity within a department from its website. The New York Times covered the fact that the file was unedited, but why didn't they have someone do that themselves? How on earth did an underfunded website manage to scoop them? I'm telling you. There's a treasure chest of untapped resources out there, and you know, we'll work for a lot less money than our counterparts on the right. Hell, I've never made more than $23,500 a year, and yet I find that I'm writing better columns and doing a better radio show, in certain cases, than some people who get paid six figures. Hey, I'll be happy to write twice-weekly articles and do a daily radio show for a lot less than that. I don't need a damn BMW. I just want to pay the rent and buy food and fight for the cause, and there are literally hundreds out there who feel just the same way I do. And I want to feel that there are people out there who are willing to back me up and provide me with the focus and training that I'll need. Now, the choice is yours. You can tap these resources or ignore them. No doubt many of us will continue to do our blogs and our radio shows because we feel compelled to. But in the end, we will wither on the vine because sooner or later, real life will intrude on us. And we will have to stop because we'll have to choose between writing and paying the rent. This should not be allowed to happen. We are the foot soldiers you will need to defeat the right and to create a better country and a better world. Let us fight. Let us help. And that was what I wrote. You know, as much as I like my job to a certain extent, the truth of the matter is I would love to be able to just, you know, do a column or something like that. Look, the only time anybody offers me any kind of actual work is to do cold calling to get donations from people. And I'm like, first of all, that's not my thing. I am horrible at that. I hate calling people up, and I'm just plain no good at it. Even though I'm told I have a good voice for it, I don't have the type of attitude that can handle that sort of constant rejection, which is what you get when you're doing cold calling, because I worked both telemarketing and doing polls, and actually doing polls wasn't so bad, but I just have this thing about calling up people, you know, unannounced, and especially if you're going to be asking them for money, you know, but there are other things that I could do. I could be a good researcher, or I could be a good this and good that. But I never get offered a job in that. I actually got offered a little bit of work from the Boycott America, but it was never really a job type of thing. I thought they wanted me to be a writer, and they haven't yet asked me to write anything officially, but, you know, if they want me to write something, I'll write something. You know, look, I talk about the Siemens and working for Siemens, and I would be happy working for Siemens for the rest of my life, but if I really did that, then I really couldn't apply myself to the cause like I really want to. I mean, this is a fire that's inside me to feel like I want to try to do something, you know, to make a life better, if not for me, then for somebody in the future, so that people in the future can have, you know, a better world to live in. And maybe it'll fail, maybe it'll work, but, you know, at the very least, I want to feel like I did something for the cause. And I have a lot more trouble doing it if I have to spend 40 hours a week doing something else, you know. So, at any rate, Gadflyer, I admire your chutzpah talking about this, but you know what, really, Mr. Waldman and the other people who are editors, unfortunately, I see you as just another bunch of left-wing clique people who, you know, have or who live in a well-paid world. You're rich people who were brought up in rich families and who had a lot more connections and money to get things started and do. And you really don't have a clue as to what's going on with the working people. Now, if I'm wrong on that, if you're listening to the show, you can feel free to correct me. But I really just don't think you have an idea of what's going on out here for the working class people. And that there are a few guys like me who are still working class, but who have a little bit more intelligence and a little bit more ability to convey their message than most people have. And even though we don't have a college education and we don't fit into your little clique, we would be great fighters for the cause. You know, it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. There's got to be a way where you can say, well, this person can be a writer. Look at what the right does. You know, they took David Brock and they were willing to pay. I don't know how much, but I'm sure he was getting paid quite a bit. And it didn't matter to them. You know, granted, we can be a lot more concerned with telling the truth than they do. But they were mostly interested in him being an attack dog. Okay. And, you know, I can do that some, but I can also, you know, be the type of person who writes articles. What type of society do we want in the future? And quite frankly, I really am too, while I have a lot of raw talent, I'm just untrained and really don't know. And nobody seems to want to take the time to help out. When I joined the Dean campaign, a lot of that was very self-run. And I really admire a lot of the things that the Dean campaign accomplished. But the problem was that a lot of people were going into it, were like myself, very inexperienced. And didn't really know the ins and outs of the game. And were really not trained as well as we should have been. So, you know, look, if you're out there and if you're listening to the show, and thanks to Ben Birch, I know that a lot more people are listening than I really anticipated. You know, if you know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who's looking for somebody to write or do something, or if you know of a radio show, look, I'm not much of a publicist. You know, it's really, again, it's the same way with cold calling. I just don't like bugging people about stuff like that. But if you can bring the show or bring the blog to somebody's attention and say, hey, you know, here's a guy that, you know, maybe can be of some help, you know, do so. And I'm not the only one. There are other guys out there. Atrios has mentioned a couple times that he's going to lose his job. Bart Kopp has been unemployed, and he's been relying on donations a lot. Of course, Bart, as I said before, you're getting ripped off by your technical people, dude. $3,600 for a Mac when you already have a studio. Dude, I've done this for less than, you know, $100. Less than $100 it cost me. You know, above and beyond the cost for the computer, which I would have anyway. But at any rate, we're not asking much, you know. A soldier marches on its stomach, and we're being starved to death out here. And we need a little help. And if you're out there and if you know somebody who's got the bucks for it to help us out, let us help us out. This is not a call for donations, by the way. I'm not asking for donations. Now that I'm working, I'm not what you'd call financially secure, or at least I'm not worried about where my next meal is coming from, at least, you know, until I get maybe laid off in a little while, in a couple of months or so. And we'll see if that happens or not. I may not get laid off. Who knows? But the truth of the matter is, I would really rather be working for the cause and getting a little help, financially speaking. But that doesn't necessarily mean a donation. I'm not looking for a donation. I'm looking for a job. And there are other people out there that are just like me. Now, you talk about having courage and standing up and fighting for yourself, and that's fine. But part of that is making sure your soldiers are well taken care of. And that's what the right does, and that's what we need to do. Anyway, I'll be back with one more segment, and we'll do some more music, and I'll talk to you in a little bit. Electric. Actually, like most radio talk show hosts, I am gas-powered, as I'm sure my wife can tell you. That was the techno remix of the Ghost in the Shell theme, Ghost in the Shell as an anime feature. And actually, I haven't even seen that. It's about a female cyborg robot. It looked a little bit too techno to me, but I like that music. Before that, we had the Teen Titans theme, which is from the new cartoon by Cartoon Network, on Cartoon Network. That's very anime-esque. In fact, that's a Japanese lady who sings that song. I forget her name. Whatever. And before that, we had Raimi Zero with Save Me, which is from the Clark Smallville. I couldn't think of the name for a second. It escaped me. You know, my memory, you know, I'm 42 years old, and my memory's starting to go. You know, and I even have, you know, trouble with sentences. Sometimes at the end of a sentence, I come up with a completely wrong fuse box. So, you know, it's just kind of, you know, it's a recurring part. My wife is sitting there just shaking her head at me. I know. Yeah, she's doing her stitchery. You know, my wife does stitchery, and she enjoys doing stitchery. And, you know, she is one of those people, you know, I mentioned people who get taken advantage of, basically, at work. And she's one of those people who throughout her life has been taken advantage of, because she's an honest, decent person who believes in working hard for a living. But rather than getting rewarded for it, she's gotten punished for it over the years. Punished in the sense of having a body that was pushed and exerted far beyond her capacity to continue working. And as long as I have anything to do with it or have anything to say about it, she can spend the rest of her life sitting there knitting and watching TV and doing a little bit of housework. We don't really need a whole lot, just a few dishes here and there and some laundry. And she can stay on the web all day. She has there's a website called Pogo.com, which is, I don't even need to worry about advertising it. They are one of the most popular websites in the world. They get millions and millions of people each day. And basically, they're just a games website. And they have a lot of different games, and it's not really gambling. They have, like, slot machines, but it's not really gambling because you don't pay anything. I mean, they have sites, they have areas where you can pay a little more and get different games and stuff like that. But really, you can do it on for free, and you can even win money on this site. It's not very often, but, you know, most people just go up there to socialize, because as well as having the games, they have chat rooms. And, you know, that's really, really nice, because my wife gets to play. She plays bingo now. They got a bingo thing. And if you've never experienced a relative, or if you've ever had maybe experience yourself personally with people who play bingo, trust me, it's not a pleasant sight. Because bingo is worse than heroin, as far as being addictive is concerned. Roseanne, one of my favorite TV shows, and a really good working class TV show, because, you know, Roseanne comes from that background, so she has as good an understanding of, you know, how things are as pretty much any big Hollywood celebrity does. But one of the things was that she had accompanied her mother to a bingo parlor, and she was always laughing and making fun, and you know, she thought everybody was ridiculous, but she kept going back and going back, and by the end of the show, she was sitting there wearing this garish outfit with this big old black hair. Something that Fran Drescher might throw out, and his pointed, those glasses that are like pointed at the ends like the old woman wearing, and a million little Kiwi dolls and 42 bingo cards in front of her, trying to keep track of 42 cards, you know, and their family had to come and drag her out. You know, people get that way. You know, my mother and my aunts, they used to go to bingo, and man, that was their life. You know, they took that stuff really seriously. And, you know, but my wife plays it online, and, you know, I'm perfectly happy with that. She has earned the right to relax. And by God, if there's anything I have to do with it, she's going to stay home and she's going to relax on pain of torture. Anyway, she's blowing a kiss at me. Yeah, I'm sucking up. What can I say? Last show, and I'm going to repeat this again. I asked for people to write emails or to comment on the blog, and nobody comments on the blog. Only about, you know, it's interesting, I only get like 50 hits on the blog a day. That's my average, and it's been going down lately because I haven't been posting as much, which is to be expected, and I'm not really too worried about it. But the WhiteRoseSociety.org, which is where most of you are getting these shows, they're much more watched and listened to. And I'm getting, you know, I'm actually getting, as I mentioned, a lot more people listening to the show than I expected. And I really do want to encourage you to write in and let me know what you think of the show or if you have any other comments to add. When I get enough people, I am going to add a section that's basically just going to be letters. And, you know, and I want to do improvements to the show. I mean, okay, I don't mind sitting here talking from time to time, and that's cool, and just checking the news and the websites and all that stuff. And to be perfectly honest, I really don't go over a lot of stuff that's in the news because so many people do that to death, and I just want to talk about, you know, issues at work and stuff like that. I mean, I could sit there and do the whole political thing, and I do that occasionally. But again, it's being done to death, and it's being done much better by other people. But I'm flexible, you know, I'm flexible. And I would really like to have a little bit more feedback. And, you know, really, radio show and its listeners are kind of like a little community. I mean, I remember some radio shows that have a whole group of regular people that call in. You know, it would be like kind of a bar, you know. You know, people can write in and I can talk and read back their comments and things like that. But I'm going to be doing some other stuff, too. I'm trying to work out a way so I can record stuff elsewhere. I'll probably just get a simple tape recorder and bring the mixer with me. I'll have to get like a little briefcase or something to carry all in. It's very light. I just had, you know, two or three mics, the mixer, and that's really all I need. So, you know, it would just be able to do like interviews and talk to more people and stuff like that and just make the show more interesting than just me talking. I'm told I have a good radio voice. I never used to think so, but I just like to talk, and I got a big mouth, and I got a lot of opinions, and I think that's really two good qualifications for a talk show host. I wish I had a regular partner, and I'm going to try. If I find somebody to be a regular partner, that would be great. I used to team up with somebody else, and that was really good. But, again, I'm not going to discuss why we broke up, but it just didn't work out between the two of us. But it was really good having someone to bounce ideas off. And it was even better when we had another guest in the studio that we could talk to and things like that and discuss different issues. So, but I am planning on some other improvements. I do get some mail. I got like three letters from the last one, and it was interesting because it's a term that Harry Belafonte used. One of my readers emailed me, and he was talking about what I mentioned about how the supervisors just really don't care one way or the other, and, you know, they're doing their little suck-up things and getting worried. And, you know, Harry Belafonte repeated a term he used this to describe Colin Powell, the Secretary of State, and the term was House Negro. And basically, in times of the old Confederacy, the House Negro was the slave who lived in the master's house and basically enforced the master's will. He was still a slave, but he was the guy that was basically in charge of the black guy in charge of handling things. So, and that's what a lot of supervisors are in that sense. They'll sit there and they'll suck up to their bosses, and meanwhile, those of us on the bottom get screwed over. If the union here was stronger, it would be different, but this is a right-to-work state. For example, if the union was stronger here, it would be a situation where it would be union people who were staying and non-union people who would get let go, and that's the way it should be, as far as I'm concerned. You know, the workers stick together, and if they don't want to be part of the union, that's tough. The thing about it is, even though, you know, the union people are going to get laid off or let go just as much as the regular ones are here, it's the union people that have more of a say in what goes on than those who are not union. So that's good there. But the union needs to be stronger here, and it's not necessarily their fault. And I might, you know, as I mentioned before, I might take a transfer to another place if I'm going to continue to work for Siemens. Or maybe, who knows, maybe somebody from Central Air Media or one of the new places that are looking for radio talk show hosts can pick me up as a regular radio host. I could do this daily. In fact, I wouldn't mind doing a call-in show or a show where I had regular guests and stuff like that and people, you know, helping me out. You know, I do everything here by myself. And sometimes it's difficult just finding something to talk about. I mean, I could just go through the news and things like that like everybody else does. But, you know, the spin I'm putting on wouldn't be much different from anybody else. But if I had somebody to work with, then we could have a conversation about these and bring up points. You know, the really good radio hosts do that. Randy Rhodes has her people, and she talks back and forth to them as well as other listeners and stuff like that. You know, and some guys, you know, they like a lot more control. Maybe I'd have a little less control. That'll probably get me in trouble because when I get combative, I tend to lose my temper. And it's not a pleasant sight when I lose my temper. I'd be like Joe Pesci. But anyway, I do want to make improvements to the show, and I'm going to continue to work on that. And I hope you all continue to listen. And once again, I want to urge you to get on the blog. That's cupojoe, C-U-P-O-J-O-E, .blogspot.com. Go in the comments section. You know, there's a little thing that says comments. Just click on that, and you can type in a comment and get some feedback on the show. I usually have an open thread for every single show. Or you can just email me at joevec@bellsouth.net. Just because you've written before doesn't mean you can't write again. Give me some feedback. Let me know, you know, and give me something to talk about. And that sort of interplay works very well. You know? I enjoy doing this show. I do this show for absolutely nothing. Nobody pays me a cent. It would be nice if I got a little money for it a little further on down the road. But in the meantime, I'm very happy to just keep on keeping on and to put this thing together. And one of the things I like about internet radio and the fact that this is not a live show is that I'm not limited nor restricted. Well, that's the same thing, isn't it? I'm not limited by time, and I don't have to worry about if something's too short or too long. That's what I'm trying to say. I can just make it as long or as short as I feel like and just basically keep talking. You don't always have that luxury on a regular commercial radio station where you have to block things out. So anyway, I'm going to cut this short here and put an end to this show. This is show 17, and I will be back hopefully in a couple of days with show 18. Until then, you all take care. Work hard, but don't work too hard. Don't get taken advantage of. Don't get ripped off. And I'll see you next time. Bye.